You are tuned to another episode of the Such Oak Garden podcast. I hope you're good, hope you're well, hope you're having a good day. I don't know where you are at the minute, but wherever you are, I hope it's a good one. We have a gentleman by the name of John O'Connor. He is a sculptor, an absolute gentleman, a bit of a legend. And you may turn around and say, which is that? And then somebody will say, oh my God, and you'll remember, I saw his stuff in that garden, that garden, that garden, that garden, that garden, and that garden. We play this intro jingle. We'll come back to you just after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
With thanks to CD Natural Stone, who helped piece this one together. I've got, you'll hear, hold on, BBC impression. There's pebbles underneath my feet, and I'm on a swinging chair, and the ground is slightly unlevel, so I'm sort of going off at a 45 degree angle every now and again, but we're going to try and make this one work. John, you're very welcome to the Sideshow.
Thank you for having me.
I've seen your pieces literally everywhere. Your good lady described them to me. I'll learn how to speak properly shortly, I promise you.
As
fellows with big gangly legs and gangly arms.
is that far off the mark?
Yeah, exaggeration of the figure is what is a better way of putting it. But that's what I work with my work is trying to get the emotion to come out through exaggerating that emotion. So, for example, as you see some of the work here, they've either got really long arms or really long legs and big feet and things like that, and they're all representative of that emotion that I'm trying to get across. Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about a piece in particular? Or
you kind of do.
Yeah. So we have a piece, for example, that's behind us. So it's Alchemy. Alchemy is a seated woman in a yoga position. So she's got cross legs, and she's sitting there, and she's got very long arms. So her arms come to 4 meters long. Now, the reason for this is what I'm trying to get across is in the tranquility, you have an horizon line, a really long line that she's sitting with. And that line is when you look at something like a horizon, your peripheral vision doesn't get the whole horizon in, but you know it's there and it carries on and on and on and on and on. So the idea of the arms being long is when you look at her from the front, you can't see her hands. So you're trying to represent that horizon line that's continuous. And when you're in a meditative or thoughtful state, your mind can expand and can travel a long way. So that's the idea behind having the long arms on that piece. So each one is, is an exaggeration of that.
Sense to you. It makes perfect sense to me, but then I'm the ultimate daydreamer, and people tend to look at me a little bit funny when things come out of my head, and I know the listeners at home will agree with that. And I don't try to be something.
Yeah.
It just exists or it doesn't exist. And so, but you're talking to a guy who was reared with stories of little people playing music underneath the flowers, and telling us now 9-year-old daughter stories of why the man on the moon has very long legs and nobody can see him during the daytime, so now she waves at the clouds. People get that and some people don't. Yeah. Or as I worded it to your good lady, there are equations and there are daydreamers.
There are indeed, yeah. I mean, a lovely little story is, that I've heard is that with the moon, it's searching for half of the moon because it's disappeared. And you go looking for it and you think, where's the moon gone? You know, but it's always there. But it disappears for us for that moment. And then it comes back again. You know, you get a half moon or a new moon or something like, you know, you don't see a full one. And then it's so exciting when you get that full moon, you know. And I think with the sculptures and things like that is you're just trying to sort of tickle that idea inside people's minds, you know, so that they can let go of and go back to that sort of dreamy state. You know, because we've all got it in us. It's, I suppose it's almost like looking at artwork. It's like when I watch people look at the artwork, it's like they're it's like counselling. You know, it's the sort of representation of how they are at that present moment in time. You know, because everybody has a completely different life. You know, they've grown up, they've been taught different things, told different things. So when they're looking at your artwork, they're looking at it completely differently to what you are. You know, because your life's been completely different as well. But when that gels together and you both have this full moon, this consciousness of you both see the same thing, or you both feel the same thing. It's a really beautiful connection between everybody, you know, that we are all there, you know. And it's just all our life and our different journeys that make us think we're so different. But we're not, really.
Well, we're not, but then some people like Machiavellian art, and that always bored me. I always thought it was the closest thing you could get to my dad's photography in 1981, which now reminds me of Cliff Richard's albums, and that never excited me in the first place.
There's nothing worse than congratulations at a wedding by Cliff Richard.
Sweet Caroline is a close second, buddy.
Yeah, definitely, totally agree with you there. But I suppose, well, I'm looking a bit deeper than that, you know, and that we're all from the earth, you know, we're all from this universe, aren't we? We're all made, you know, we're all made from the one thing, because we can't be made from anything else. You know, all the plants, all the grass, all the trees, the sculptures, our emotions, our consciousness, all comes from the one place. And it's just different because we've been brought up differently. You know, it's like if you look at it from plants, I suppose, from a plant point of view, you put one in the shade and one in the sun, they're both the same plant, but they're reacting differently, aren't they? But they're exactly the same. You know, it's just how they're moving within life.
For those who aren't aware, how many times have I seen your pieces at Chelsea Flower Show? How many designers have you worked with? Or can you name a few of them off the top of your head?
I suppose the few that I've worked with, James Besson, and recently Chris Beardshaw. We did one for his garden here as well. And that went on to Great Ormond Street Hospital. So that was really nice. And the idea behind that was a piece called Joy. And he came to me and he said he's doing this, he's doing a garden, it's going to go to Great Ormond Street, and he would like a piece of sculpture, artwork. That Great Ormond Street, obviously, brilliant hospital. And you're dealing with highly emotional people. You know, their child is either going to be cured and everything's fine, or they may unfortunately... So he wanted a sculpture that would hold both ideas. So it was very difficult, you know, to come up with something that would have both of that. So with Joy, we decided to do a little girl who's looking up, and in one way it was the joy of relief that, you know, everything is fine, and the other one was, because her arms were open, she was also angelic. So it's also, I'm fine, you know, everything is, you know, where I've gone is beautiful, you know. So it was getting a balance between those two pieces. So that was probably the most recent one I've had here at Chelsea. Hampton Court, on the Bali last year, we had a piece called Earth Elevation, which is a figure with no arms, just balancing totally on his head. And the idea was life is in a balance. Sometimes it can be, when you look at the piece, it's a bit sort of, his neck could break and that sort of thing. You get that sort of fear factor in there. But the other side of it is, you know, looking at life from a different perspective. You're looking at it, you know, from upside down. So if you turn everything upside down, how do you then look at life? Is it then painful, you know, or is it not? You know, it's sort of playing with that idea as well. So, yeah, where do these ideas come from? Just life experience.
I spoke before to Matt Keightley about standing into the crowd, just moving out into the crowd at Chelsea, and people saying, oh, I don't like that, or I love it. And I had the same conversation or similar with Jo Thompson. And she spoke about a woman who critiqued her garden, and I think Jo was standing beside her and had a conversation with her. You can go back and listen to those episodes at home. And as a, by the way, Besson, he's a former guest, he'd be good to listen to as well. Have you ever heard somebody say, oh, I know what the artist was thinking when he made that piece, and you're standing beside him going, did not?
Chelsea's very, very good for, because obviously the people that are looking at your work don't know who you are visually. They might know your work, but they don't know you as a person. So it's very easy for you to stand next to a group of people or one person, they're looking at your work and they critique it, you know, what they feel about it. And it's a fly on the wall. It's you know, it's a fly on the wall documentary. You're listening to people talking about your work, which is really, I find, really inspirational, actually. Whether I agree with them or not, it doesn't really matter. Because what I'm basically trying to do is you're trying to touch people in a certain direction of what, you know, of work, of what they might feel about your work. But it's not necessarily exactly what and when you're in a studio all the time, you don't get that critique from the general public. You're getting it from yourself or maybe from your partner and that sort of thing, but you're not getting it from people that you don't know. So it's really nice to hear what people have to say. And sometimes it can be, you can get 9 out of 10 people walk past and go, it's beautiful. And then all of a sudden you get somebody walk past and go, that's horrific. That piece really scares me, or that I don't like that. You know, and that really interests me. Wow, you know, where are you coming from? And then you listen to them talking about your work and, you know, why they find it like that. And this is what I mean about all our lives are so different. You know, what they see for some reason triggers something within them that they are fearful of a piece, and yet somebody else can stand in front of that and can get nothing but joy from that. And it's really interesting to listen to people critique it in that way, you know?
How long are you in the business, one? And two, when you set out, did you intend only to do pieces for the great outdoors? I say only, predominantly, or become better known, at least to me, considering this is a garden
show. Yeah.
Yeah.
My work isn't predominantly for gardens. Most of my stands or shows that I do, especially at Chelsea and Hampton Court, are generally, I look at it as an installation for the artwork. What's nice, I enjoy working. I started off my life as a landscape gardener many, many, many years ago. So I enjoy using landscaping within the work and holding it all so it can hold it together. And it's really interesting working with garden designers, because obviously they're artists in their own right for what they do, and you are as well, and you have to come to this sort of balance between what they see and what we're doing. And what is also interesting is they have the same challenges as an artist in the way that you're sometimes held. You know, in landscape, for example, the designer might say, oh, we can do that, but we can't put that plant next to that plant because that wouldn't happen, or we can't do this or we can't do that. And in the same with art, is you say, well, I can't do it, it can't look like this, it can't be that colour, it has to be like this, because that's what people would expect. They would expect to see the sky would be blue in a painting, you know, but it's kind of losing all that. So you're back to your childhood. Why not paint the sky purple? Doesn't matter, does it?
No.
Why not put a daisy next to a rose? Does it matter? You know, it's just, you know, if it looks right and it sits there beautifully, but we're all restrained by that, you know. We all think, oh, no, it can't be that. It's got to be done in this way, this form, this sort of particular thing. So I suppose part of the artwork and working with a garden designer is trying to free ourselves so we're not sort of held within a system. And what's nice about doing sort of something like Chelsea is I feel that with the designers and with my art, I can break out of that. You know, people don't, you know, putting the artwork in a position or putting the artwork in a way that is different than what people would normally think how to show their work. You know, that it's an artwork in their garden. It's not a garden sculpture, if you see what I mean. Rather than going to the garden centre and buying a concrete sculpture to go in the garden and go, right, we've got a sculpture in the garden. Now they're buying something which may be challenging. Every day they get up and that sculpture will feel something different within themselves as they grow and they learn different things. They look at the sculpture and it may make them smile one day, the next day it might not. You know, it plays with their with them, with their imagination and with how they feel. And so it's an artwork, it's a part of a living thing within your garden, such as the garden is itself. When you're part of a young tree and you watch that tree grow, every day is a different feeling towards that tree. So it's a similar thing with the artwork.
I hope it's okay to ask you this question, and I hope I worded it in the right way. As you at home are well aware, I do a lot of preparation for these things. Well, it allows the listener to have somebody ask the entirely naive questions of, should you meet somebody at a bar and you just say, well, what do you do for a living? And that's the way I have always seen it. And then I just become inquisitive. And invariably people will say to me afterwards, why did you ask them about that? And I go, well, I never thought about it. Why don't you paint the sky purple, or why don't you paint it yellow and turquoise? It doesn't really matter. It's just two guys having a chat. The question I wanted to ask you was, what's it like being this popular? And two, were you always this popular?
I don't feel I am popular, but it's very, very good of you to say that. I try to keep away from general marketing kind of things because I don't want to get just go into a world where I think I am popular. I just want to try and keep as level-headed as I possibly can. I'm aware of the fact that I do have people following me, but I don't think about it that at all. I try to avoid contact in that sort of way of popularity, but it's very nice, obviously, to be recognised.
That is, not you as a person.
Well, to give you a Kate Gold quote, she always prefers that the gardens speak for themselves, and she shies away from the interviews, albeit I've chatted with her recorded 3 times, and I'd consider herself and Keith quite good friends. But I appreciate what she's saying, which is build the thing and then just step away and let people go, oh, that's wonderful. When the listeners at home press the middle button on your phone while you're listening to this with your headphones in, and you're on the tube or you're in Salt Lake City and you're on the, what do you call it over there, is it an underground, what do they call it, John?
Subway.
Right, now I'm feeling a bit peckish, but that's another story. And you'll see the ones that he's done with James Basson, and it's pretty striking, to be very fair about it. But let me take this one, because I'm now after losing my train of thought now, so I'm just go on a total different trajectory, and you lot can have a giggle at home listening to this. What was that question now?
You haven't given me one yet.
When you first left landscaping and you became a sculptor, okay, I won't ask it that way, I'll ask it based on myself. I remember when I was 24 going 25 saying, I want to be a garden designer. I want to make gardens. I want to take a picture in my head and I want to make it a reality. And most of those pictures in my head were ultimately daydreams.
Yeah.
Some people giggle at that. And I appreciate why they giggle at that. But as I always remind them, I wasn't really trying to make you giggle, but I'm happy that you're laughing.
Yeah.
A strange answer, I appreciate. When you started on this journey to become, inverted commas, John O'Connor, the sculptor, Robert Plant-esque status of the art world, if you get me. What was the start bit like, and is it very different from where you are now?
I think the start, when I was in landscaping, I went to landscaping not necessarily because I wanted to be a landscaper. It was when I left school. It was a long time ago. You were just given things by job centres and things about what you would like to do. And I knew I liked working with my hands and creating, being creative. But back then, the school, comprehensive schools, never really pushed artwork, especially not for guys. It was metalwork, woodwork, that kind of thing. Yeah, so it felt natural to do something with your hands, because art wasn't introduced to you, was to just do something creative. So the nearest I could probably get to that I really enjoyed was landscaping, because I just enjoyed the working with design and things like that. And then through that, I then eventually ended up working for a little bit with some of the theme parks, like Alton Towers and things like this. And then I sort of was open to the world of sculpture, although it be sculpture in a prop way. It was still quite exciting. I was thinking, well, this is really interesting. And I got a fire in my belly and I just sat at home creating heads and things like that. And then took them to in clay. Just buy a bag of clay. And I just very naively would just copy a head. The first thing I ever made was the head of the alien. Right. You know, in the film Alien. Yeah. I did that. I copied that head. And everyone, and friends and family were like, wow, that's amazing, that is. And they did a hand, and they go, wow, that's brilliant. That's so good. You know, and I was like, oh, really? You know, so then I thought, wow. So then I took it to art school. Yeah, I went to art school with this as my portfolio, because I had no A-levels or anything in order to get into a university or art school. So I ended up just taking work that I'd made. And they said, well, you haven't got the qualifications, but you've obviously got the talent is there. So they just said, fine, you know, we'll take you on from there. And the learning, what I thought was sculpture, was like modelling. So when you see a scary dragon at a theme park or something like that, you know, that's modelling, yeah? And what art school put fire in my belly was showing me art rather than modelling, which was a reason for doing it. You know, what's the concept? What's the idea? Why are you making that? What are you trying to say when you do that? And that just absolutely excited the life out of me, you know, and it still does, because now it's not just about making, it wasn't just about making something look like something, it was about you creating a storyboard, you know, with that piece, you know, and that's put the fire in, and that's, you know, at the beginning when I was first taught that, that's the thing that put the sculpture, you know, and that knowledge sort of learning together, and that's where I went from there.
I said this to James Basson when I was chatting with him in the front seat of my Jeep, recorded.
Lovely man.
Genuine, lovely man, and I had the pleasure of meeting him on Joe Thompson's garden, name dropping all these phones being in its busy day. But I think when I was chatting with himself and Helen in France, and we brought up the interview, and I can't remember who said what, but anyway, it was my mom, bless her, looking out the kitchen window at me goofing with plants at the back garden, getting it wrong and making things that I thought were utterly fantastic, but in reality just from my imagination, and none of the grown-ups could understand it, and mom sort of got used to it. And the picture I have in my head is her looking out the kitchen door and neighbour saying, what's he doing? And it was just, leave him, he's okay.
Yeah.
He's, you know,
yeah.
But she used to call me her special child, and I didn't know, well, you can take that on every level, I suppose, and some giggle at that, and I appreciate why. But I did feel, again, unintentionally, like I wasn't the, I'm trying to think, well, you had the Osmonds, and then you, fast forward, then you had Wham. No, they weren't really a boy band. Well, they kind of were, but they were a duo, not a foursome. Boys, okay, thanks for that, Boyzone. The Monkees, technically. But if you understand me, like, there is a formula, but I was always looking out the window. I knew how to do the things that got my grades up in school. I was intelligent enough to know how to do that, but ultimately I just wanted to, like, I taught myself how to speed read so I could daydream more, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you always a bit of a daydreamer too? Is there a little, like, a Rick Mail inside you that just never grows old? And three, I've always said, the day that little kid inside me takes the drop dead Fred Rick Mail pill to eliminate the imaginary friend, well then it's time to go get a job as an accountant or something sensible. I say sensible. Does that make sense with you?
Absolutely. Yeah, yes to all of them. I am a daydreamer total. My attention span at school was probably about 5 seconds. I would always be told stop looking out the window and counting the snowflakes, you know, rather than listening to whatever it was that was going on. I can't even tell it was going on because I was too busy counting snowflakes. But totally a daydreamer, attention span very short, and as far as that, definitely. I think the child within you, I think, is a really positive attribute to everybody in life, you know. But I think it's really nice to have that. I think we all have a really young mind. It's just coerced into perhaps going, you know, into an adult way of life. It's kind of fun that we, you know, to play, and I always have this playfulness, and I suppose art, you know, has that as well. If I lost that, I don't think I ever would, but if I did, life would be a bit dull.
Well, my dad liked the straight path to the shed.
Yeah.
I never saw the point in that. You just look out the window from the sink with the dishwasher beneath, looking out at the washing line, kind of thought, that's a bit shit. You should get mom and roll around in the daisies. Adults will turn around and go, I can't do that.
Yeah.
My head was always the why not.
Is your head still there now? Why not?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. No, I mean, I'm. Don't get me wrong, you're talking to a guy who fell asleep in the back of a truck one night because it was easier than walking home.
Yeah.
And ended up in Galway. You know, I've ended up in really strange but magically wonderful places. But on all of the journeys, if I take gardens I've done, if I take show gardens in particular that I've done, I turn around and say, oh, I've got a great idea. And they all tend to say, in brackets, you're a bit loopy. And three of them will turn around and go, genius, we should do that or totally do that if you've been watching American sitcoms lately. And so you surround yourself with great people. You have taken the daydream in your head. You've made it into an equation, because obviously it has to be structurally sound with 3-4 meter long arms sticking out the side of it and no hands. You make it look like a daydream again, because nobody considers how structurally that's able to support itself. And ultimately that's wonderful, because you shouldn't explain the equation for falling in love or the equation for the daydream.
No.
It should just be a daydream.
It's happened, yeah.
But you've got to remain in business.
Yeah.
So you've got great people by your side, and your good lady is extremely organised, because otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Exactly, yeah. No, yeah, Joey's my marketing guru and keeps me in the straight. I would have, without having the right person behind you, you would have, you know... I don't know where I would be without somebody structuring what I do in a work, in a commercial sense, because as we've talked, the creative world doesn't, it lends itself to a commercial world, but I don't think of it as a commercial world. I just creating and that's it. But you have to make a living. Unfortunately, we do. I mean, in a beautiful, fairy world that I sometimes I'm in, I would love to just produce art and not even have to sell it. You know, having to sell it is just the commercial arm to it. But that's where, you know, good people behind you, you know, help you with that. I don't create a piece of artwork necessarily. You know, I'm not thinking, oh, that's a seller or anything else. You're creating artwork because it's quite intimate to you. And then you have, you know, the people around you that will then see that work, and then they will take it on its marketing adventure. But you don't have to do, you know, you're not doing that. Hence, you know, interviewing artists and things like that isn't easy for artists to be interviewed, you know, because we're not in that, you know, I'm not in the... that plane, you know, I just enjoy creating work and I enjoy watching people looking at it, whether they see negative or positive, but having it out there, you know. And we all possibly, some people like when they see a beautiful garden, it just touches them, and that's all you're after, really. That's the biggest payment, I suppose, is somebody seeing something you've created and it touching them. And I've had people coming to me that are, you know, disabled or, you know, mentally in, you know, in not in a good place, and have sat with the work and they've cried and they've come up to me and they've said, you know, that's so touched me, that piece. It's such a beautiful piece. I really thank you for creating that piece. That's worth more than, you know, any amount of money that somebody comes in and just buys for their garden and things like this. You know, that's the beauty. That's the real positiveness behind it all. I could waffle on, but it might go anywhere. We could start talking about all sorts of things. All our little fairies and our flowers next to us, they're all watching us.
Well, at least they're not leprechauns. Never to be trusted.
No,
never.
No, not. When you run through the woods, they always take my hat off my head.
Bastards.
they can't be trusted, but it's good to keep them on the good side of them. Always turn around and laugh and pick your hat up and say, you little tinkers.
On a separate episode, I might tell you the story about the little people and tales of biodiversity there. And now I'm wondering if I've already told you, listen at home, about that beforehand. In the meantime, for your listener at home, anything you need at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, this episode, with huge moves of thanks. You can hear, look, it's literally all around me. And that's CD's Stone, who've been involved in a multitude of gardens. I don't know how many they're involved in, but a stack load or a gaggle, a lot of them anyway. And I'm very grateful that they put their hands in their pockets and made this and a few others possible. Genuinely, without them, it wouldn't have happened. John O'Connor, to you, to the good lady, for helping me piece this one together. I really am very grateful, and it's such a privilege to daydream on a journey with you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure, and hopefully one day we'll collaborate. That'd be beautiful, wouldn't it?
I think it would, but I've got a funny feeling it'll just be the two of us in an armchair in some pub made out of twigs and tea tree pea oil, sitting there pondering.
What a beautiful avenue garden that would be.
We need a lampshade.
Two guys sitting in a chair having a chat.
So when are we going to do this collaboration thing?
That's about how wonderful it will be.
And just the world just passing us by in speed motion, and we're just, yeah. We'll chat to you next week. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care.